Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with
Kyla Garcia, and I'm playing Sarah Ridge Polson.
And
Jake Wade, playing John Ross and Jim Ross.
In the new world premiere of Sovereignty at Arena Stage, now through February 18th. Thanks so much for coming in, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Hit our audiences with the basic premise here.
You're going to be transported from 1835 back to present day throughout the play. You're going to be dealing with the actual history of Cherokee removal, which happened around the time of the Treaty of New Echota, which is dealt with in the play in 1835, and a present-day Supreme Court case. I get to work in both time periods, and in the future time period, I get to work with Kyla.
I only get to work in one, in the future.
So you're in the present day, what is it, what's the case, the Violence Against Women Act, 2013?
That is a huge part of the case, okay. But we cannot reveal what the actual case is that goes to the Supreme Court. That's a bit of a surprise. It involves defending the sovereignty of Native women.
And explain how the sovereignty is sort of a bit of a double meaning here. It can be a sovereignty, you know, tribal sovereignty and of one's body.
Yes, they go hand in hand, really. So my character, Sarah Ridge Polson, I'm only in the future, but the past influences me so much. And the Treaty of New Echota provided the legal basis for the Trail of Tears, which happened in the later 1830s. But all of these events have shaped tribal jurisdiction today. And the tribal jurisdiction over the nation, it parallels the women. Because if your country isn't protected and if your nation isn't protected, then your women aren't protected, right? Mm-hmm. It trickles down,
right,
those protections and that sovereignty. So, yeah. So it's all very tied together.
Yeah. That actually, what was that movie? Wind River dealt with the crossover of that. And Hostiles comes out Friday.
Yes.
But no, you're right. It's all tied together. You're talking about how you're jumping in back and forth between different timelines. How does that actually, if we're the audience sitting in the theater, how does that actually visually shift and, or even just structurally, story-wise, how do we jump back and forth?
Well, we take you on a ride. And the idea is that the worlds, they push up against each other because they're, it's not that they're jolting you from one to the other. It's that they sort of seamlessly help one another in this story that we're telling.
What's so beautiful about MK's writing and Molly's staging is that there's never a moment where it's like, and now we're in the past, and here is the future, and it's this clunkety clunk, clunk. Making up new phrases.
Like, don't give away the song.
It's
and
this
be
clunkety
clunk
clunk, clunk where everything just like where everything like
clunkety
stops.
Clunkety clunk clunk went the trolley.
But it's not that, right?
Yeah,
it's
right,
not
right.
Like, okay, here we are in the past and here's the top
right.
hat.
Yeah.
It's so seamless because in actuality the past and the present intertwine all the time. In
past
our daily
prologue,
lives.
Yes.
The past is what?
I said past is prologue.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
I'm thoroughly convinced time is an illusion. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're living forward and backwards constantly, I think.
Absolutely.
Dude.
Without
yeah?
it.
Like that?
Without it, we'd have to experience everything all at once, right?
Jake's over here like, man, it's way early. I
only
have to
drop
my coffee.
Through my mind right now.
Tell me about your character, Jake.
Well, I play a couple of characters. I play John Ross, who historically was between 1832 and 1865. Nobody go to Wikipedia right now and prove me wrong, but it's about that area. He was the principal chief of Cherokee Nation. And it shows the divide, the story from the past, the people that are were being pressured to move by the American government, the president.
Is this Andrew Jackson?
Okay. Especially, and there are some people that say, "All right, well, maybe we should move." And John Ross is one of the characters who says, "Well, we'll never move. We'll never sell our lands."
Is this down in what is present day Georgia?
Yeah, okay. Around that right. area. It includes a little bit of Tennessee, a little bit of North Carolina, South Carolina.
Present day Georgia.
But Georgia.
Past Cherokee Nation.
Yeah. How about.
That's what it was.
Current should be Cherokee Nation. How about that? Let's call it that.
Yeah. And then Jim Ross, who's a fictional character, but who is descended from John Ross, and he works in the Attorney General's office, and that's where we meet.
Grandson, great-great-grandson, however that math works out. Yeah.
There's a lot of greats.
Great-great-great-greats.
Yeah.
And I'm the great-great-great-great-granddaughter of Major Ridge and John Ridge, who knew John Ross and were very close with John Ross and worked with him to establish the Cherokee Nation Constitution. And then there was a rift when it came to signing the Treaty of New Echota.
Both,
so we're both
direct descendants.
And so ancestors of two people. That's so fascinating.
And speaking of clunkety clunk clunk, I'll make a just a
just a theme for the interview.
Just to make a little bit of an analogy, the Hatfields and McCoys, the Rosses and the Ridges, there's even to this day, there's still a little bit of animosity between the two families. And I'm sure there's plenty that get along.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they're going to be listening to this probably too.
Yes, and I'm sure they do.
But it's, well, you know, it's definitely,
this
you know.
This interview will bring them together finally. Let's do it. We're going to end the bad blood. Yeah.
But they'll be coming to the show as well. So we'll have Rosses and Ridges in the. In the audience, which is really exciting.
That's awesome.
To see their story told. And that's the important thing, that this story has not been told. And we're getting reactions from the audience at the end of the show. This is they're upset, not to say that everybody that comes to see the show that's going to be upset, because it's uplifting as well. Mm-hmm. But we've definitely had people that say, I can't believe this. I can't believe this happened, that this is still happening.
Just outrage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about, it's good. That's what good theater should do. I mean, we should walk away outraged, like, right?
Right.
Talk about how also, so that we can get people to come to it, though, how it's also, you know, uplifting and that kind of stuff.
Well, it's a story about healing and forgiveness. And even though these old wounds run deep, when we face our past and when we face our shame, we can heal from it. In one of the other articles and interviews we did, I was talking about how in Germany, they teach their children so deeply about what happened in World War II.
Holocaust, everything.
I mean, when you meet Germans in I lived in London for a year, and whenever you meet German people, they almost apologize for being German because
it's right there.
It's there. And they're like, we know what happened and we're sorry.
You almost need to have that front of mind so to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Absolutely.
So why are we here so reticent to teach the original sin?
Because if we look at it, we can move past it. And I think America doesn't do that. America is built on Native American genocide and African American slavery. And as much as I love being American and I love this country, we are built on a grave, a mass grave, and we don't talk about it. It's like, let's step over that. Look at this beautiful building we've created here, and look at all of the wonderful things we have, instead of look at what happened for us to get here. So the fact that Germany educates their children, they know this from so young, and we're not doing that. And that's why when you try to have discussions about racism, some people will actually say, oh, that was so long ago. People are okay now. They don't understand what is systemic about it and how the system is broken, but it's a broken system that's broken on purpose and it's working.
Right. Why are you still bringing this up? Why can't you get over it? And it's like, because the vestiges of it are still here, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. We're living it out every day. And what you were asking about, you know, the sovereignty of tribal nations parallel to the sovereignty of women's bodies. I mean, with the Standing Rock Sioux, when people were protesting DAPL, they kept saying, protect our water, protect our women. And at first I didn't understand that. And I spoke to MK about it because she was fighting on the front lines and working on that case. When she's not writing plays, she is literally fighting.
Well, it's
nice. On the battlefield, in the courtroom. She's reframing the narrative on stage, and she's rebuilding the law with her work, which
is awesome.
Is incredible. But I asked her about it, and she said, and then of course I learned all about why that's connected. And she said, you know, whenever these oil companies come in and they build a pipeline, they build these man camps. And when these men come, the rates of attacks, assaults, murder, kidnapping, it triples.
Wow.
Okay. And it's not like, oh, maybe this happens. It is a fact.
It is statistically proven.
Yes.
There's a direct correlation between the pipelines and the assaults. Oh my God.
Absolutely. So that's why they're not just saying protect our water, because of course that's a basic human right. We all deserve clean water at the very least. But they're not just saying that. They're saying protect our women because the women are the most vulnerable and the children. And if you destroy the women and children of a country or of a nation, you destroy the people essentially because then that nation cannot go on.
Can't reproduce. Can't. Yeah. No, you're right.
So that's why the women are targeted. You see it in countries of extreme war. It's always the women that have it the worst because if you destroy the masculine, right, in war, the masculine destruction, if you destroy the feminine, you win. You can win the war.
Yeah.
And it's a war on our bodies and it's a war on our lands and it's all connected.
Yeah.
It's all connected.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, this is powerful. All right, I'm coming. I got to see this. I want to be outraged and uplifted too. Okay, we were talking a lot about, earlier about sort of how it follows the characters themselves or these ancestors, but explain how the playwright herself, Mary Catherine Nagel, isn't this based on her own grandfather's stories?
Mary Catherine Nagel is the great-great-great-great-granddaughter of Major Ridge and John Ridge.
Oh, wow.
Like my character.
Wow.
That's where the similarities end, though. This character isn't based on her, other than her being a whip-smart, confident, incredible lawyer who knows exactly what she wants. But besides that, the similarities end. But yes, she is the direct descendant.
That's incredible.
So not only is this story being told that we've needed to hear for so long, but it's being told by the person whose family has experienced this. Which is incredible because Wind River was a wonderful movie. And I'm so happy that there are films being made that tell these stories and make you see an example of what happens when you don't have jurisdiction and how these men get away with awful, awful things. But it wasn't written by a native.
It was a white dude writing and directing it. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's wonderful. That's
and
not
starring,
a dig.
Starring a white person, which is great. I got nothing against it. I think he's great. But, we need to star in our movies. We need to tell our stories. And that's what Mary Catherine's doing here. That's why we're here.
Yeah. So it's not a dig at all because we need that light shown no matter what.
But it's what makes something like this even more powerful because it's a personalized story.
Yes. Yeah. It's coming from her. And that's such a huge part of Native culture is oral history and oral traditions and for it to be passed down because she heard this story of her grandfather's her entire life. And if someone had written this play that wasn't her, think of all the things that may not be correct or may not really reflect the experience.
That's true. There'd be a lot more creative license, I'm sure. Well, that's powerful. So we mentioned it. Gloria Steinem's coming for,
I think it's
January the 28th, yes, for a post-show conversation.
You guys
can't see this, but they're like freaking out. They're like, oh, my God.
We are all over the moon. Excited.
Do we know how we got her involved? I mean, this legendary, activist. How did she get brought in to give this post-show convo?
Gloria Steinem is a dear friend of Mary Catherine Nagel's.
And there you go.
They're dear friends, and MK is wonderful and one of my sheroes as it is.
Sheroes.
I love that. And so she has really incredible friends and I'm really excited. I'm going to try to play it cool and not have zero chill like I'm having right now, Jason.
And it makes sense.
Well, it is kind of cold in here.
It totally makes sense that they're friends. I mean, they met on the front lines, They are two feminists that are going to go down in history as like leading the charge, So there you go.
So
the 28th, it may already be sold out. And by the way, we're packing the house right now. So
in previews.
We're in previews.
Full houses.
Yeah.
And we're still getting changes.
In my bag right now, we've got on the car over here. We were going over our new scenes and new lines. So we're going to learn those today and then perform them tonight.
While we were sitting here. Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to be saying tonight.
That's the fun of working on a new play, though.
Yeah.
Because it's always changing. And then when MK's in the audience, she's like, oh, this could be better, and let's do this.
Take me more into MK, because just the fact that you give her like those initials, there's an affection there. I love it.
What
is she like in terms of just behind the scenes? Because we'll know the work when we see the work, but behind the scenes, interacting
with
her.
She's fearless.
Yeah.
She has no apologies for what she believes in and for what she knows, and that's so inspiring as a woman to see another woman like that, because I feel, as a woman, I think so much about what other people are feeling. And sometimes when I want to say something, I will think about what they're feeling instead of saying what I want to say.
Mm. I feel like self-censoring a little bit?
A little bit, because I'm like, I don't want to hurt their feelings. Or there's this thing that happens, and it happens in many women, where we care. We like caretake before we're like, this is what I feel. And I think, and I don't like to overgeneralize, because I'm sure there are women that don't experience this. Yeah. And I'm sure there are men that do the same thing. You know, that think, yes, yes, that think, oh my God, am I going to hurt that? But generally speaking,
a clunky generalization.
A clunkity clunk clunk.
Clunkity clunk clunk.
Is that, you know, it can be easier for men to just say it. Even in classrooms when you're a kid, right? There comes a time when, like, the girls stop raising their hands as much. I wasn't always one of them. I was like, every second.
Somehow I believe that.
But yeah, but there's a moment when that happens. And that moment has never happened for MK. Mm-hmm. Like, when she's in the rehearsal room and she has a thought, she does not apologize for it. She doesn't think about how it's going to affect the room, because it's just the truth. And so it comes out as the truth, and it doesn't hurt anybody, because it's like, this is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
She's incredible. And I was just telling Dev in the car on the way here that we had this research packet in the room that had been put together for us, which was so lovely, because as actors, we do our own research, and it's, mm-hmm. there's so much time we put into it. Mm-hmm. But Arena is incredible, and there was this wonderful research packet. MK took it and edited the whole thing wherever there was an error, and completely like redid it, and then had all this commentary as if it was a brief.
That's so amazing.
And it wasn't mean. It wasn't like, oh, she's angry, but she just was like, this isn't factual. This is incorrect. This is incorrect. Mm-mm. And then there was a reference in there about the Dollar General case that she wrote one of the greatest briefs of our time for. And it was saying like, oh, reference this website for Dollar General. And she had this whole little paragraph that was like, no, actually reference your playwright who spent over 100 hours working on the brief for this case. So that, wow. The essence of MK, she's fearless.
That's so amazing.
And it's incredible.
That's great. Well, it's personal to her, you know, she wants it to be a certain way.
Yeah, and she never stops, and that's another thing. I don't think that she actually sleeps. I don't.
She's working on five plays
I don't believe
at
it.
The moment. We asked her.
Some
how
people
many.
Just have a high motor, man. They just get up and they
she's
go.
She's got plays premiering all over, but she's also an attorney, and her, you know, she's the only one in the rehearsal room when she's there. She's not always there.
And she's a partner.
She's the only one there that's allowed to have her phone on, because she might be getting emails and she might have to go sign a protection order immediately to help. You know, she's out there fighting.
It's wild.
At all times. So, yeah, she's incredible. Incredible.
That's awesome. And it's part of the Power Plays initiative.
Absolutely.
I believe that's, do you know that the stats? It's 25 new plays over the next 10 years.
That's so exciting. That is so incredible. And
that's what makes Arena, you know.
The Women's Voices Festival as well.
Right. It's both of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we should mention that one of the most badass women on the planet is directing the show, and the artistic director of Arena Stage, Molly Smith.
In her 20th anniversary season.
In her 20th anniversary season.
All the stars are colliding.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we are... We don't. If we had time to be blown away, we would be every day by Molly. But she keeps the pedal down so to the floor that we don't. I mean, we are working our buns off in this rehearsal room because we're constantly getting changes. Like I said, we got them today. But throughout the process, we've got a brand new script every day.
Yeah,
pretty much.
I call MK the queen of rewrites.
Oh, there you go. Is Molly MS?
Molly,
MS and MK. Molly Smith.
Oh, Molly's Molly, right? Yeah, Molly's
just Molly.
Molly, boss. Yes, ma'am.
Head honcho.
Molly has an army at Arena Stage. Anything, you know, it's the team.
I mean, look who just won at the Tonys. Dear Evan Hansen started here.
Totally.
At Arena.
That's right.
So you guys are starting
hallowed ground.
Yeah.
Hallowed ground.
Yes.
For sure. I mean, Arena Stage.
Absolutely. Speaking sort of the point you were saying about Wind River and, you know, how we need to tell our own stories, how many in the cast are actual, you know, Native American heritage?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone. Every character that is, yes. Well, every character that is playing a Native character is of Native descent.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But, and then there's some
And then there's
white
some, there,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
Right.
But how many? There's 9 actors. Oh no, are we gonna? We're on the spot right now.
Maybe we don't have to. Let's how not many? Give the actual numbers.
There's,
but tell me, 9.
There's yeah. 9. There are 9. But how many Native American actors?
Me, Jake Hart, Andrew Kalani, 5. So 5 of 9.
Okay. All right. Well, then, but I mean, it's a story. But yeah, no, that's perfect. All right. Yeah. So tell me about how it's personal to you guys then.
Well,
personalize it to your own life. Yeah, well, that's what I want to
absolutely.
Get at.
So I've been acting for about 20, maybe almost 25 years, which is long enough to see a huge change I hate saying the business, but it is. I remember productions, you know, there was a place in my career anyway, where I just said yes to everything. And even 10 years ago, 10 years ago, you say yes to things where they're like, here, put on this wig. Yeah, should we hang some feathers on that? Absolutely. And just, could you look maybe stoic in this moment? So where you
like
compromise and you sort of
words, basically.
Yeah, totally. Well, but you also, you're portraying, an outsider's
right
perspective of what a Native right. American is. I've been told I'm not Native enough, you know, I've even been said we need more Indian-ness. A recent talkback at a play I did at History Theater, a woman in the audience at a talkback said, how much Indian-ness did you guys decide to put in this show? As if it's like a little ingredient,
right.
You know,
word
that you could just toss
been
in.
Used multiple times? Indian-ness?
Indian-ness. No, it just popped up because I just thought of that.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't her fault, you know, it's like she doesn't know, you know. It's the same thing of when people say, what do you guys like to be called?
Right.
You know, I don't know. I know what I like to be called. I like to be called Native American, but some people like to be called Indian.
Yeah.
But I'm very grateful to have lived to see this day because things are changing.
Yeah.
Things are changing. We're telling our stories. We are telling our stories. Mary Catherine wrote this play. She's a Cherokee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we come from all over the country and we're not all Cherokee.
Where'd you grow up?
I'm from Alaska. I'm a Tlingit.
I'm going to look up the spelling.
Try it.
How
man.
Do I say it?
Tlingit.
Tlingit.
You gotta, did it, man.
All right, cool.
Nobody gets it on the first try.
All right. Cool. I'll take it. And how'd you get into acting? I mean, we'll keep it brief, but.
Yeah.
We still got to get to your story, too. But.
Molly Smith cast me in my first play in June, Alaska. She was the artistic director. 17, I guess.
Really?
Yeah, she was doing an adaptation. No, she had the playwright, and I hope I get this right. Derek Cloud, yeah, Derek Cloud adapted the Bible, and Molly Smith was directing, and it was called Genesis, and I played a lizard in the first act.
You were a lizard?
Yeah.
Aww.
And what I is played that? Day five?
I played a lizard man, and she pulled the theater stage up, and it was on the concrete floor. And the audience was sort of looking down at this stage, and I crawled on this concrete floor and all soaking wet. And then she kicked people out after Adam and Eve are kicked out of the Garden of Eden. So the audience and the actors get kicked outside, and it was just in the fall, turning into winter in Alaska, and the rains were coming and freezing at night. And I had 2 lines in the second act. Molly Smith, though, put me in my first.
So
play.
That was the genesis of your career.
Full circle.
Nice. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah,
Genesis of his career.
I don't think you even heard it. your story. Where'd you grow up? How'd you get into acting?
I grew up in Hoboken, New Jersey.
Oh, nice.
And I got into acting because I really loved to read, and my teachers noticed that, and they put me in this theater program where we would do children's versions of Shakespeare plays.
Okay.
And my first role ever was Lady M in the Scottish play at 8 years old.
Wow.
What?
Yes.
Child prodigy over here. You thought you were cool with your 17-year-old Genesis over here.
Yeah.
Pretty
you
badass
go,
all
go
around.
Girl. All right. Well, all right.
And then my mentor is a woman named Margot Singalisi who saw me and was like, who is this child? I want her to go to my district, because I didn't live near her school where she taught. I lived on the other side of town.
Yeah.
But she made it so that I would go to that school. And she really believed in me and nurtured me as an actor. And then 11 years later, I studied at the Globe in London. I went to Rutgers. And you spend a year over there. And I played Lady M again.
Whoa.
On the Globe stage in a scene study that we did. So I thought that was full circle, because I wasn't 8 anymore. But that was that was my entree into acting.
And here you are.
Yes.
Together in the same play.
And in answer to your previous question about where we were from.
Oh, yes.
My father's mother is Taino.
Okay.
The Taino Indians are descendants of the Arawak Indians, which were the first natives to come in contact with Columbus.
Oh, wow.
And they're local to Puerto Rico.
Gotcha.
And then my mother is entirely of European descent. So I find that I have both cultures culminating in my bloodlines. And it's interesting. I feel that the wars that were fought in those bloodlines are still happening, but they're not on the battlefield. They're in the courtroom.
And in the theater at Arena Stage,
yes.
Now through February 18th, the world premiere of Sovereignty. Like how we did that. Thanks so much for coming in, Jake, Kyla. You guys are great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.